making the most of your retirement savings. Hi, everyone. I'm Kathy Poholsky. Welcome to The Art of Aging, a 20-minute podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. A conversation with Joe Elsasser in just 30 seconds. First, your AOA tip of the day. Looking for a new car? Well, if the search involves an older adult, consider involving him or her in the process, especially if getting into or out of the existing vehicle is a challenge. In addition to the height of the vehicle, think about wide door openings and seats just below hip level. In case you're wondering, Kelley Blue Book ranks the 2023 Toyota Camry best for seniors, followed by the Honda Accord and Subaru Legacy. Now back to our topic, tax-efficient distribution strategies. Joining me to talk more about it is Joe Elsasser. Joe is a financial planner and partner at Adaptive Advice. He is also the president and founder of Covisum, which is a financial technology company. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Joe.
Thanks for having me. Always fun.
You bet. All right. So Social Security, just one of many retirement income streams. What are others?
You know, actually, Social Security is really the root of most people's retirement income. And Covisum, which is our software company, started with Social Security a lot of years ago. And when you start there, you inevitably notice how strange it is relative to other assets. So Social Security actually gets its own tax treatment. In order to determine how much of your Social Security benefit is taxable, you actually have to jump off the tax return and complete a worksheet that's in the instructions, and then you come back onto the tax return with the actual taxable amount. Well, once you recognize that, it's like, wow, this is so different than how other assets are taxed. When I put down my IRA withdrawals, for example, what used to be my 401k, and when I retire, I tend to roll it into an IRA, 100% of that is going to be taxable as I withdraw it. That's not true with Social Security. It's not true with my taxable or my brokerage account. It's not true with a Roth account. So coordinating distributions from all these different account types through the course of retirement can create a lot of efficiency. For a lot of people, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference between doing this well and doing it poorly.
Okay, you mentioned other assets. What are we talking about there?
Yeah, most commonly, most people retire, save through their lifetime into a 401k. And when you retire, you most frequently roll that into an individual retirement account. So that's the most common one. Other retirement type accounts, Roth IRA. And so Roth conversions is a really common technique that retirees should explore. And that's moving money from an IRA into a Roth IRA. So a Roth IRA is a second type of account. And it's unique in that you pay taxes on the front end before the money goes into the Roth, but then you never pay taxes on any of the growth, and neither do your beneficiaries if you leave that kind of account behind. The third is often referred to as a non-qualified or a taxable account. That's like if you go out and buy mutual funds directly without a wrapper, like an IRA or a Roth IRA, or you set up a brokerage account, or you buy CDs at your bank. Those are all non-qualified because they don't fall under any specific IRS qualification. Those are some common ones.
Okay, so when people are starting to think about this, what do you advise them to do? I mean, this sounds like an awful lot to be able to be tracking, and I know you obviously help with that. But as folks are beginning to head down that path, what are some of the things that they should really be thinking about?
Sure. Well, the way the question is most often phrased to us is which account when? Which account should I be using at which points in retirement, and why should I be using that account? Now, of course, with the IRA, you're forced to start taking distributions. That age has changed. It went from 70 and a half to 72 to 73 to 75, all depending on when you were born. But a lot of people try to hold off taking anything out of their IRAs until they're forced to by those required minimum distributions. And that can be a real challenge, because oftentimes those minimum distributions end up being more than they actually need to live the lifestyle they want to live. And what does that mean? Well, it means that the amount that's more than they actually need, it's being taxed at their highest marginal bracket. So they're paying a larger portion on that in taxes than they would have had to had they spread those distributions out even before they were forced to take them at age 75. So that is probably one of the biggest strategies that we use, is to let's plot out the client's overall retirement income need first. So we've got a reasonable estimate. Now, of course, the day you retire, that changes, right? And then 2 years in, you'll have done some of the really cool things you were waiting to do, and it'll change again. So it is evolving, but having a good target, a good starting point is so important. Then saying, how much do I have to take? Like if I have a pension, I don't get to choose whether I get that check every month. I get it every month, and that's gonna be taxable money to me. So I've gotta establish a baseline. What do I expect in terms of annual income, and what's that tax implication? And then I've got to project out, what do these minimum distributions look like when I hit age 73 or 75? And is that going to be more than I need? If it is, how much more? Is it a problem, or is it just a little nuisance? If it's a problem, then I want to start really exploring, how do I shift money either from the IRA to the Roth, or start taking IRA distributions sooner? I want to blend those income streams to try to levelize my tax burden each year throughout retirement, because that creates a lot of efficiency.
What are you seeing with the clients? Well, let's talk about this for a minute. Who are the clients you're serving right now? How would you explain that to people?
Sure. So we work specifically with middle and upper middle income people in retirement transition and beyond. So it's kind of the easy delineation is, if I think that I'm on the edge of about ready, I'm not quite sure when, but I know I'm close to retirement, that's when people start working with us. Because that's the best time to say, am I ready? Am I more than ready? Can I pull the plug yesterday on, you know, and get into this next phase of life? So that's the timing. In terms of middle to upper middle income, why do we use those phrases? We use those phrases because most of the people who identify in that way are not looking for home runs. And when I say home runs also come with strikeouts, right? So our typical client is looking for a reasonable level of predictability and professional assistance in getting there. Those are important things, because if you're looking to go out and find the next Facebook, that's not the kind of client we work with. We're looking to make sure that people don't unretire, number one. Number two, that they get to enjoy the lifestyle that they are used to, that they plan for. And with any luck, they have something left over for kids or causes they care about.
Okay, I ask because anytime you mention the word strategy, there has to be something there with which to work. And so you say that when clients come into you, you want them at this particular time, and they're saying, you know, where am I in all of this? Are you finding, I mean, stats would show that the majority, a good chunk of folks, aren't really ready for retirement, let alone long-term care. These people who are coming to you, the people you just described, are they for the most part on target for where you'd want to have them be in order to put some strategies in place and so forth? Or do you feel like maybe some of them are behind the curve and you're having to do a little bit of extra?
You're absolutely right. The majority of the country is undersaved. But what's interesting is people who are oversaved are the ones who feel undersaved. People who are undersaved are most frequently the ones who have a little bit of false confidence. It's so strange to see that in the middle, and when I exclude the very wealthy from that, people whose minimum distributions are going to be so far beyond what they need, they tend to have a pretty good idea where they're at. The reason that's important is because that initial checkup, that initial process, is really kind of a litmus test. Where am I? Am I good? And most of the people that come in, you know, typical asset bases like savings levels for people that we can actually deliver a lot of value for, you know, is somewhere between 500,000 of retirement savings and a few million. Mm. You know, you start to get up above that and you see unusual investments that we're not, there are better people. It's not our niche. It's not our focus. You see people with five different buildings and, you know, partial interest in a variety of different businesses. There are better advisors for those people than us.
Okay, what do you like best about what you're doing in working with the folks you work with? In other words, why do you do what you do?
I like winning and I like seeing people win. So when I say that, it's like there are good ways to put a puzzle together, but when you get it just right, that is really fulfilling. And some of the things that we've been able to do over the years, frankly, have been exciting, you know, in terms of systematizing ways of making these decisions so that we can be consistent and reliable in how we make the decisions, in the process that we follow. And I think that's really what most of our clients end up, I guess what sticks out is it's all process driven, right? Why are we going to take this extra withdrawal this year? Well, because we can get it out less expensively in taxes than we would if we waited another couple of years. So let's get it out now and escape future taxation, as an example. But all of those decisions really need to be made in this context of the overall financial plan. And that's where I think, you know, professional advisors in general, and, you know, I certainly put us up there, really add a lot of value.
Success really does begin with planning at home. And so if people are listening to this and they're thinking, gosh, I fall right into what Joe was talking about in terms of my age and kind of where I am in my journey financially, what should they be pulling together at home? When do they know it's time to call? And then once they come in here to see you, how on earth, I mean, you're just meeting them, you're new to them, they're new to you. How do you get them to kind of settle in and become open to this whole process? One that includes this whole, you know, strategizing tax-efficient distribution strategies. There's a lot in there, so.
There's a lot, and frankly, you've got to have a high level of openness, because when you leave things out, it blows up the whole plan. Just that simple. So it's one of those things where actually I would encourage people that that's not comfortable for, and it's never going to be comfortable for. You're probably not one who's going to be able to work effectively with an advisor. You know, you've got to get that shared. It's funny, our software company, we actually named Covisum. It's two Latin roots that mean shared vision, because the whole point of a good advisory relationship is creating a shared vision of the future and then tactically every year executing against that. I mean, that is the goal of an advisor, is to get the client where they're going as efficiently as possible. So things that someone can do at home, being organized is helpful, but frankly, it's not a prerequisite. Being open or prepared to be open and recognizing that it is a process, it will be a little bit of work on the front end. You probably will address some questions that maybe you have not addressed, especially if you're married, aligning on what are the goals in retirement? What do we really want to do? What do we enjoy together? How much separate time do we want? It's so fun seeing those relationship things evolve and then become a plan, and then the value in executing against the plan and the enjoyment that comes as a result. I mean, that's just a lot of fun.
Very cool. We're talking today about tax-efficient distribution strategies, but also talking about something you said, and that's process. This whole thing is so process-driven. What would you like to share that we haven't already discussed about the strategies piece? Something maybe that people can take away from this discussion today?
Sure. Probably the biggest thing that we see is people who have saved in only one way, and most commonly it's the 401k. And if they've been really diligent about saving into the 401k, and now they're 60, 62, 64, 67, what have you, and they're thinking, okay, I'm on the cusp of retirement, and gosh, those Roths sound really nice, but I didn't do that. I did IRAs. That does not mean that you are forever locked out of a Roth. And those are the planning opportunities that we are frequently exploring, especially right now with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act set to expire in just a couple of years. We're at some historically low tax rates. There are opportunities now that will be lessened if the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act does sunset in 2026. So I think that's a big takeaway, is there are opportunities to reposition assets ahead of tax law changes, getting started sooner is almost always your better bet. I mean, there's very little downside and a ton of upside to getting started a little before you're ready.
Okay, thank you. You're very futuristic in your thinking, Joe. And I mean, obviously in the financial world, you need to be, but that's just kind of who you are. If somebody were listening, they'd probably be asking something like, what does this guy see for down the road when it comes to retirement planning? I mean, you said it's never too late to think about something like a Roth. What else are you anticipating for people, your clients, maybe your future clients, in terms of how you may do things a little differently down the road based on what you're seeing now?
Well, funny enough, something you mentioned very early was long-term care. So one of the things that we do is we stress test plans because, of course, it's great if everything works out exactly the way we plan. It almost never does, right? And so stress testing a plan in advance for some of the things that most commonly derail a plan, right? If one member of the couple dies early, if either member of a household needs long-term care, what happens if Social Security benefit cuts actually materialize? Is your plan still okay? What if inflation continues the way it has for the last 2.5, 3 years? Those are all big questions. They all have a big financial impact. So what we want to do is say, is the plan okay even if those risk events materialize? And if it's not, let's plan now so that we can, you're never going to take the risk entirely off the table, right? But the idea is we want to balance the potential outcomes so that we don't have this one scenario that looks great, but in every other scenario, it's terrible, right? So balancing outcomes is a really important part of that process.
Well, and certainly critical in the whole big picture of things. But as you're talking, I'm thinking, so how are individuals reacting when it comes to the discussion of long-term care? Because of course, most people don't think they're going to get old and they're not going to get sick and, you know, they're, right, they're never going to die. So you're trying to get them to see what could happen and how to effectively plan. And they might be telling you, Joe, that's all, but we're not, that's not going to happen to us. We're going to be okay. We still want to do X, Y, and Z. Are you finding that if you're kind of approaching things in the way that you have been, that people are pretty accepting of it? Or are you being met with a little bit of resistance in terms of your explanation, especially when it comes down to the cost of long-term care?
I think there's a little bit of a generational shift happening right now where, you know, people today who are 60, 65, almost everyone has had an experience with a friend or a friend's family member or a family member who has gone through some form of diminished capacity and has had to make some of those hard calls or has had to spend time, effort, money to care for a loved one or seen somebody who's done it. And so when we have these conversations, we're never talking about you got to insure the whole cost of care. You know, frankly, the insurance industry pisses me off a little bit, and pardon the language, but it does, because the sales process was always, here's this huge expense, let's pay for the whole thing through insurance. And as a result, people did nothing. Mm-hmm. And by doing nothing, they end up, frankly, putting their families in a more difficult situation than they had to be. Mm-hmm. So most often, we don't want the outcome, if you have a long-term care event, you're awesome, you're in great shape. No, it should still be a bad thing. It just shouldn't be a devastating thing. Finding that kind of balance is the way we approach the conversation. So because people have had experience with family members and loved ones, that's a balance they're also looking for.
Okay, thank you. Talking with Joe Elsasser today about tax-efficient distribution strategies. Thank you very much for being involved in this conversation today and for all of your time and expertise. Of course, my husband Mike for making us sound so good, and to all of you for listening to The Art of Aging, a podcast to encourage independence and peace of mind by informing, educating, and celebrating you. I'm Kathy Poholski, inviting you to join us again as we'll be posting new segments every 2 weeks. Till then, may you find meaning in each and every moment, hence discovering what I believe to be the true art of aging.